Hi, I'm Steve Todd, and you're listening to Musicians FAQ, a radio program focused on learning more about the musicians that are entertaining you around Waterloo Region. We're featuring your favorite local singer, guitar player, or drummer, learning how they got started, influences, funny stories about past gigs, and upcoming performances. You'll also hear some great recordings of their work. In addition, we'll be learning about others in the music industry that are helping to maintain a vibrant music scene. This is Musicians FAQ. Hey, thanks a lot for listening in to Musicians FAQ. It's Steve Todd. Today is part two of our interview with Paul and Marg Weigel. We're going to be learning about Paul's lifelong passion with playing the drums, his career in photography. He's filmed bands such as Genesis, Phil Collins, and Led Zeppelin, among many others. We're going to learn about his Forerunner project, the charity that he runs, their passion for sailing, and also just living life in general. He's going to be talking about that along with Mark. So let's check in with Paul and Marg Weigel.
I had something from 1776 that was, I think it's, I'm the fifth generation. So go back, okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, and that was the...
That's when they came over?
They came over. But they came over from Western Germany, just south of Stuttgart.
Okay. Oh, Stuttgart.
And, wow. Yeah, so, but yeah. They were in Bavaria. Well, they were merchants and traders, yep. And so on. Okay. And the family was very successful, but the son felt that he wanted to be a missionary.
Okay.
Mm. And so, and he was a musician.
Wow.
Played violin.
That's amazing.
The,
you know
the
what?
Orchestra.
To go, like, so that type of work and the musical thing carried forward, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 to your generation.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I would say
the
I'm
DNA
fairly,
yeah.
You know, some people would say religious. I don't like that word. I don't like the word religion. I like spiritual. I play every day, and Margaret always asks me, how did that go today? And I, you know, some days I go, it's another day at the office, but then many of the days are days that I say, you know, I got to joy.
Yeah.
I got to that moment where I felt joyful.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, that is a valuable asset in my life,
yeah.
To be able to have those moments of just, like, just inexpressible joy that you can get to by playing an instrument,
yeah.
And playing music.
Yeah, and plus you're by yourself,
yeah,
and you're
absolutely.
In your own little, it's almost bubble. Like meditation or something, right? Like
you're
doing your own thing, and you're there's no other outside.
You're within your own spirit.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Do you play at home? Steve?
You know what? It's cut way back with this COVID-19.
Yeah.
I was at first, and now I struggle to get my guitar out to play. Once in a while, I'll stand on the front porch, and I'll have my own concert with the sheep. There's
nice.
All these sheep
across
the street.
Across the road, yeah.
But it's getting more and more rare now. You've taken pictures for Led Zeppelin and a whole bunch of other huge bands in Toronto.
Yeah.
And probably other places with photography.
Most of the bands I worked for were British bands, actually.
Okay.
I worked a lot for EMI,
okay, yeah.
Which was eventually became bought by Sony Music and so on. But yeah, I mean, I got hired to do a lot of those jobs, and I got to meet those guys. And you know, I mean, Phil Collins is the first thing if there's one dominant thought, I would say he's a good old boy.
I bet
he just is an average, no pretense, down to earth.
Yep.
Good old guy.
Yep.
The kind of guy you'd say, I could go fishing with him.
Yep.
I'm a drummer, and it takes a bit of a drummer to get me impressed, and he's a solid guy.
So you were going backstage and going on the stage?
They knew why I was there, and, you know, I was always tried to be as respectful. You know, I have a job to do, but sometimes there's conflict between, you know, the job you're doing and whatever. I worked for the record company.
Okay,
so they'd say, in this tour, we need some pictures of this tour for, you know,
whatever
for our
promotional
purposes here, and for, you know, selling the act to other promoters in other cities.
So you had thousands of pictures that have never been viewed by anybody else, probably, right?
Yeah, I have, like,
wow.
I got, the only ones I don't have, was Led Zeppelin. And it bugs the heck out of me that those are the only ones, and they're probably worth the most money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was the tour, you know, they played at Maple Leaf Gardens, somebody took all the cash, because everything was in cash then. There was no credit cards or anything. Everything was in cash.
Yep.
And it was a ton of cash, because you can imagine they hold 16,000 people at Maple Leaf Gardens. Yep. So
Harold Ballard would close the bathrooms off and turn off the water fountains. No, he would. Seriously.
Really? He was a miserly person.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they took all that cash and they took it back to the hotel and put it in a safety deposit box.
Yep.
Next morning, the box is empty.
No way.
Nobody knows.
Well, what about you?
Nobody knows what happened to the money. So that was the one gig that Led Zeppelin did that they never got paid for.
But what about your photography in your camera, though? Like, you had pictures you took.
Yeah, but it's all film, right?
Yeah.
They were all transparency slides.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't make prints from it. I gave them slides.
Oh, okay, I understand.
So that was the originals. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do that after that anymore, because I said, there's something wrong with this picture. I'm giving them the originals.
Yeah, okay.
I want to keep the originals.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What other bands did you do then?
Genesis. Wow. The tour where Peter Gabriel left.
Okay.
And Phil Collins came to the mic from the front.
Wow.
And they got Bill Bruford as drummer. And he had come out of Yes, and he'd been doing some things with a couple other bands. Bruford was on the gig.
Yeah.
Bruford is like a monster drummer.
Sure. He's, I'm sure, one of your idols, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was. Yeah, and I photographed, oddly enough, I ended up photographing him quite a few times.
Yeah.
He was with Uriah Heep. He was with King Crimson. I did King Crimson.
Okay.
I did Golden Earring. I did Gentle Giant.
Yeah.
But all of those were British bands that came to Canada.
So pretty much weekly, were you going back to Maple Leaf Gardens to do photos?
Well, sometimes. It didn't, you know, it just depends on where they were playing, who they wanted me to photograph.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of how it worked. So.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun meeting those guys. They're oftentimes just really good people.
Yeah, for sure.
Really good people.
Yep.
No pretense. Just trying to make a buck.
Oh, have your bunch of your pictures been published then?
I still have them.
Yeah.
But it's still time to publish. I actually met John Wenton, who is a bass player for King Crimson.
Okay.
Great. He'd been in a lot of other bands. He was in Uriah Heep and so on. And he was one of the top bass players in the era.
Okay.
I met him somewhere. I don't remember where it was. And I said, John, I got a lot of great pictures of you. And I told him what the pictures were.
Yep.
And, of course, he said, I want them. Put me down. I'm taking them.
It's a great career.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
And you're also kind of drumming on the side a bit, little too, right?
Like I was playing. I always was playing. And I would say that when I had my kids and I was starting a new business or something like that, you know, the amount of time I could afford to give to that joy, that pleasure, was probably not as much as I should have. It's probably misguided in some ways.
No,
because
but
one's
your kids, right?
Personal joy should be, in my opinion, fairly high on the list of priorities. So, but now, you know, I actually make time, because I this is a learning thing, right? You don't realize how important drumming actually is to you, or playing an instrument actually is to you. But as you grow older, you start to see, you know, this is something I've been doing since I was 12 years old. I still keep doing it, and I never want to stop. I want to die at my drums. You know, that's kind of how I want to end my life, is to be able to just keep doing what I love to do. And not only do I love to do it, but I get this amazing joy from doing it. Yeah. So, yeah.
Hey, I managed to dig up a recording with Paul playing the drums. This was recorded at The Ridge in Roseville last December 2019. We have Yvonne Way, and she's singing George Michael's Faith. If my memory serves me correctly, Rob Gies is playing the guitar and Rick Kitchen's on the bass. Enjoy.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I'm
Hi, it's Steve Todd from Punky Doodles Corners, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS, RadioWaterloo.ca.
Forerunner actually was a name that I was attracted to probably 10 years before I actually started an organization called the Forerunner Project, which was started officially in 2008.
Yeah.
That 2008 was a turning point because during that time, I ended up thinking about, you know, what is a forerunner? I had this word forerunner in my sort of mind and thought, and it just kept coming back. And I didn't really know what the word meant. Like, what is a forerunner? Who is a forerunner? And I eventually discovered that a forerunner is a person who is intrinsically motivated to build, create, innovate, and reform whatever part or segment of society they're working in. Okay. So to make that simple, is they come into their area, whether it's healthcare, education, science, government, you know, name all the areas of society, and those people come in and they go, interesting. I think we can improve this. Because they're naturally want to build, they want to create, and they want to reform those areas of society that they're in. And so I realized that for me, that was who I was. I mean, it took a while. I didn't see that in myself in the beginning, but it took a while. And then I realized, I started to see it in other people. And I go, there's a forerunner, there's a forerunner, there's a forerunner. And I was really intrigued by it. And one of the other things is I know the theme is music for this radio program. And I realized that many of the people who chose to have music as a significant part in their life were also people I could identify, and once I explained it to them, they could self-identify themselves as forerunners. And so I went, they are my peeps, they are my people, we are one in a lot of ways. And then I began to kind of spend time to drawing a profile of them, you know, like, what are they? And one of the things that I identified as being a forerunner is people that have a different way of processing fear. So for instance, you might start a business or take some other risk. And for the most part, they ended up when you interview them and talk to them, you find out they don't respond to fear the same way. Most people say, well, what would happen if this happened, or what would happen if this happened? And for the most part, they don't even think about that.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
They just think about, well, when we get there, we'll do this. And when we get to this part, we'll do that.
Yep.
And the downside never becomes a factor. So that was one of the things that I identified as part of a profile of a forerunner. And then I realized, too, that when you look at, you know, you kind of zoom up to 10,000 feet and you look at society, you say, these are the people that are driving our society forward. They're the innovators. They're the creators. They're the builders. They're the people who say, you know, you can't keep doing that same old thing and getting these kinds of results. We can get better results than that. Let's change this. They're the reformers. So, that, you know, this is kind of where I have invested the last, you know, 12, 15 years. It's an exciting group of people.
Yeah.
They're fun to be with.
For sure.
All of them are different.
And your organization has gone to Kenya?
Yeah, we worked, you know, a really close friend of mine who's doing a wonderful work. The organization used to be called Organics for Orphans, and now it's called Thrive for Good. And it is, you know, had a significant work in Africa, primarily East Africa, in Kenya, in a place called Katale. What we do as an organization is train people to grow their own food for nutrition and for income as a business. I mean, the Forerunner Project, as I mentioned earlier, we had been previously working in Central America doing entrepreneur camps. My wife and I, we taught young people how to start their own business and so on. So we were looking for those people who were willing to take a risk.
Yep.
And that's the other personal profile that you might draw, is that they're people who are willing to take a risk. Lots of people just, they come to a point in their life and they just can't take the risk.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it's yep. Okay. It's who they are. But forerunners tend to be willing to take risks all the time. The other thing they do is they love adventure. They love adventure. They, you know, like you say to some people, say, hey, look, we're going to have to move, and we're going to have to, you know, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty in your life. And they go, yay. Where most people are going, I don't want to do this. It's scary. I don't know how it's going to turn out. They go, it'll turn out fine. Let's do it. They're really open to adventure. We believe that the future of our nation and the world is in the hands of forerunners, people that are going to make positive change in our society.
When we started out in 2008 in Kitchener, we started with the Forerunner Film Festival. We brought in documentary films and guest speakers and highlighted films about forerunners, people doing amazing things in the world and taking risks and taking a lot of flack sometimes for taking risks and coming up against governments and whatnot. And or perhaps the film was made by a forerunner film producer, so they're trying to highlight an issue. So they weren't just drama and comedy, they were specifically targeted at appealing to people who like to see documentaries and see positive things happening and how does someone move from point A to point T and all the steps that are there to move things forward and to move people forward. And we also did here and also in Costa Rica a radio show through the Forerunner Project. It was called This Is Wisdom.
Wow.
Where Paul,
good for you guys,
where Paul interviewed forerunners. So we researched people in Costa Rica and in Canada, and Paul interviewed them and produced a half-hour podcast.
Great.
But great stories of people who fought City Hall, people who, what are some other...
Worked in, the, like, for instance, La Carpia is a place in
Costa Rica.
San Jose.
Yep.
It's a sub-area, which is a favela or a slum.
Yep.
And it's a really a tough place, very dangerous place. And, you know, this woman, she came from the United States and... Mm-hmm. came there when she was, I don't know, 18 or something, and she's still there. She's never left. She's been there like for 40 some odd years.
Building schools,
wow. Doing stuff, and yep. Never letting up. And she's been through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so we would talk to her about, you know, when did you ever get to that moment where you thought, I just can't keep going on anymore? Mm. Yeah, a few times.
Yeah,
and yet somehow she would get through it and carry on and keep making a difference. And so we felt there were lessons to be learned.
Yeah, for sure.
In those stories.
Good
and so the idea was to tell those stories, yeah. And allow people to learn from her, yeah. what she learned in her, yeah. experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another really good one was from a fellow in Toronto who started the non-smoker rights.
Okay.
And he was just such a forerunner, yep. guy, and knew this was an issue and doggedly kept
this
going.
This back in the 80s probably, right?
Yeah, I don't, mm-hmm. know. Was it in the 80s? Yeah,
yes.
He's,
that's right.
Still going. Yep. What's his name?
Garfield
Mahood in,
okay.
Toronto.
Yep.
So we did a big interview with him. And the protocol that he started in Canada has been used all around the world, yep. of how governments can bring in certain legislations that now we take, yep. for granted that,
yeah, that protect people who
rights.
Don't smoke.
Yeah, for sure.
You shouldn't have to
great
breathe
story.
Air that is,
yep.
Contaminated with cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah. And another local fellow here in Wellesley who many years ago realized there was a connection between what animals were eating and their disease rate. And so he went, cancer in humans. So he went kind of totally organic way back. And he took such flack from the industry, and was,
yeah.
called a fool and, you know, discredited, all those things. And he just persisted. And he's now kind of the forefather of organic animal care.
Paul and Marg talk about how much forerunners love adventure and travel. And we're going to actually hear a song that they recorded. They were down south at a place called the Edgewater, what was that called? Edgewater Village. And they got up on stage. Marg had a keyboard and Paul was playing the cajon. So let's listen to this song. It's called Kansas City. And then Paul is going to start talking about their love of sailing. All right.
I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City, hey Kansas City, we come. They got some crazy little women there, I'm a don't ever give you one. Well, I'll be standing on the corner, yeah, 12th Street and Vine. Whoa, standing on the corner, yeah, 12th Street and Vine. Oh, with my Kansas City baby and my bottle of Kansas City wine. Well, I might take a train, I might take a plane, but if I have to walk, I'll get there just the same.
I'm going to
Kansas City, hey Kansas City, here I go. They got some crazy little women.
Margaret, just one more time on the piano. Yeah, hit it! I might take a train, I might take a plane, but if I have to walk, I get there just the same. Don't you? Kansas City, hey Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there. I'm a donut, give me one, easy on. They got some crazy little women there.
The story starts actually at a place called Emma's Back Porch in Burlington, Ontario.
Okay.
And if you know that little restaurant, it actually has a back porch, which they would, you would call it a patio, that looks out over the lake.
Yes.
And we were there, Margaret and I were there, and we were looking at sailboats moving around. And we were saying, we'd just come back from a trip to Brazil, and we were saying, you know, we live in one of the greatest places in the world. Five of the largest lakes in the world.
Oh, for sure.
Our freshwater lakes are
absolutely
right here. And, you know, when you look at our lives, we aren't really doing anything to participate in or take advantage of the phenomenal opportunity we have. There was a sailboat going by. I said, why don't we learn to sail?
Mm-hmm.
I always wanted to learn to sail. Why don't we learn to sail? And Margaret, being who she is, she took about a nanosecond to say, yeah, let's do that.
So both of you guys have no experience in sailing at all?
No. No.
You don't?
Other than I had grown up in Sarnia and we had boats, but they were power boats. We went skiing, but not running a boat,
okay,
not sailing, nothing.
Not yeah, I'm a rural Ontario farmer.
Paul had the soap and
farmer's
rope. What's the old Avon?
Soap on a rope.
Soap on a rope. That's it. That's pretty much it for Paul. You know, at that point.
Don't go there. Don't go there. There are a lot of implications on soap on the rope. I don't like.
Okay.
But anyway, you know. So we decided we'd go and take some courses, and we did.
The next
year we went and took a course at Humber College, and it was like the first entry level. Makes you sort of what they call competent crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
I got to tell you, it was difficult.
Yeah. Really?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I was in my 60s, and there were a lot of technical things to do, a lot of memorizing, a lot of learning that I had.
But was this in the classroom, or you're
also
on the water?
Sailing
and on the water.
Too.
Oh, both.
So
okay,
it was a full week course,
okay,
a whole day.
Yeah.
We stayed down there and took the course. And
it was a week long.
Week long, yeah.
And we went out and sailed.
But we both,
and
I passed. I was happy and thankful.
And
I
Paul,
passed.
He was a whole
and
other
passed
story.
Just, Paul just whizzed it, of course. And then went on to take other courses. He took other courses.
Okay.
I just took that one course.
Yeah, I took a weather course and, VHF, which is the communications. There's certain ways to do that.
Yeah. And how many years ago was this then?
Well, this is back about 12 years
okay
ago. Yeah.
Yeah, before I retired.
Yeah, so anyway, we did that. And then I came back about 2 years later, and we had quite a bit of sailing under our belt, and I took additional courses. So the final level was what they call a bare boat, meaning I can go and rent a boat, you know, a $100,000 boat or $200,000 boat, and they let me take it out of the marina.
Yeah.
And so I got to that level, and I was part of a group that on the internet that where people would post, you know, hey, I'm moving a boat from here to there and I need help.
Yeah.
And there was this fellow from Chicago who he was a city manager of a small city in a suburb of Chicago, and he'd always sailed on Lake Michigan. And he loved boats and so on. And his dream bucket list objective was to buy a catamaran and sail it to the Virgin Islands.
Oh,
yeah.
He talked about that and in his little ad saying, I'm looking for somebody to help me because I can't sail the boat myself. When I saw that, I said, this is a guy that I think, you know, we have something in common. So I contacted him and we found out that we liked each other and that, you know, that we had similar needs and so on. And he said, why don't you come and meet me in Savannah, Georgia?
Wow.
My boat is getting some repairs mm-hmm. there. And it was a really nice catamaran.
I bet.
Somewhere in the, you know, if you're thinking of a boat, it was like in the $600,000-$700,000 range. It was a nice boat.
Yeah.
We get there and everything's fine. Like, he's a really cool guy. And the boat is really well appointed and really, really nice. And I said, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we sailed from there to, it's called the Ditch.
Yeah. Can I interrupt?
Sure.
I think you were expecting more people, though, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah, I'm getting to that.
Okay. sorry. Because I heard the story before.
Yeah.
I think it was like Scooby-Doo. Where like,
well, he did say in somewhere along the line that, yeah, you know, like, you know, I have some other people that'll be coming, and you know, you're fine to stay on board if you want to, but if you don't, that, you know, if you find it too crowded or weather, or it was a big boat. I mean, it had more living space than we have in our house.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So it was a beautiful boat. So, but we decided to go down what's called the Ditch, and the Ditch is the intercoastal waterway, which runs all the way down the east coast of the United States.
Okay.
Actually, the west coast has something similar, not quite as long as the east coast. But it is inland waterways that connect all the way so you can travel the full distance
yep.
from New York City to
But you're
Florida.
Not on the ocean, though.
You're not out in the ocean.
Really? Okay.
So it's tedious work because, you know, you're always making adjustments. You're going from one inland lake to another, to this canal to that canal, so you're always making
a lot of bridges. Yeah.
And our mast was 63 feet.
Wow.
And it had a 3-foot antenna on top of it.
Okay.
And the maximum clearance was 65 feet to get through the bridges. So we were going through, and the aerial would tick, 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 tick all the way. And, you know, if you hit it, you know, you're talking about maybe $40,000 or $50,000 worth of damage.
Oh,
so
wow.
You would feel like, oh man, like, oh, I hope we don't hit anything.
Yeah.
You know, I hope we'll go through in low tide or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But we ended up making our way all the way to Fort Lauderdale.
Good for you guys.
And
sorry, where did you start again?
We started
Savannah,
in Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it was a fair bit of time. We ended up in Lauderdale, but we had, this was in early December, we had a fair bit of bad weather.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you try to look for what they call a weather window when you're not fighting the bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have high winds or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were crossing from Lauderdale to a place called Bimini. And Bimini is a small island, two islands together. And we were going across there. But that is where the English Channel, or not the English Channel, the Gulf Stream crosses.
Okay. Oh. Yep.
So that's 5 knots of current.
Oh, really?
And so you're sailing across it. It's a bit of a challenge, you know.
Yeah. On a sailboat, too.
Yeah, on a sailboat.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing that and crossing and getting to Bimini. And we spent a couple of days there. It's kind of an interesting little island.
Yep.
And then from there, we went across what's called the Bahamas Bank, which is... it is like a desert with about 12 to 15 feet of water.
Wow.
And lots of coral heads and things like that.
Wow.
It's beautiful, 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 beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then when you get to there, you get to what's called the Northwest Passage Light. And it is a marker in the ocean that tells you where you can go from there. So it's marked on the chart, so you say, oh, that's where we are. It helps you identify. And we turned south from there to heading for NASA. Okay. The interesting thing is that we went from 10 to 15 feet of water to 9,000 feet of water. It was almost 2 miles deep.
Yeah,
it's called the Tongue of the Ocean.
Electronics we had.
And we sailed into NASA, and then from there to a place called Georgetown, which is across the Yellow Bank, and a bunch of other places. We went to places that were like astoundingly beautiful that you can only get to by boat.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And even, sorry, if I can back up, way, way back when you were going through that five knot
current,
you guys had sailing skills from Humber College, I guess.
Yeah. So but we had also sailing
skills. So were you able to help this guy?
Paul steered and took shifts. I did most of the cooking
and
the cleaning on board. But if we got to a harbor or something, we'd all have to handle the lines and put the fenders out and all that stuff.
Wow.
So I knew how to do all that, but I was basically...
So you guys are experienced sailors at this point.
We were experienced in the sense that we had a good amount of knowledge of how to operate a boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how to read all the buoys and understanding of that.
This is awesome.
But once you get offshore, I mean, there were some things that, you know...
You can't learn in a boat.
Until you're there. Boat,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That deep part of the ocean, is that the same as the Marianas Trench?
It's exactly the same. That's the Marianas Trench is the deepest.
Yeah.
This is called the tongue of the ocean.
It's,
it's 9,000 feet deep.
Okay. Wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Interesting. Great. Wow.
The one story that I can relate there is I had just retired in June, and we left on this trip to go to Savannah on Halloween, October 31st.
Wow. Okay.
So just a number of months later, and this was kind of our first, retirement.
Hurrah.
But I remember my brain, when we were sailing, we'd be out sailing and this beautiful sky and there's water everywhere, but my brain just started firing off. It was just like, things are happening, and I was sensing things. And after you've been teaching all these years, and I retired when I was 60, so I was old enough to kind of be in complacency and doing a routine, and then all of a sudden you're in a totally new environment.
Yes.
You're just seeing ocean.
Good for you.
You're just on a boat. You've never really been on a boat for an extended period of time,
right?
Just this course that I had done.
Yeah.
Paul is actually a natural sailor. When we were taking the course, he would be able to dock, and he could just dock. He's just got that really wise, he's logical thinker. I'm more of a random thinker, but he has a lot of the skills that are necessary for really to be a good sailor.
Yeah.
And it was very, very helpful. The boat that we were on, despite the fact that it was this very expensive boat, had a really bad stove. So it was a three-burner stove that only, I think, one of the burners worked. Despite that, I had to work magic and feed the crew, which I did.
She did. She was amazing.
And the crew was just yourself,
the owner. Yeah, the owner and Paul and me.
Because he was expecting more people. Is that correct?
He was expecting more people, and then people dropped out. They just ended up not coming.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it's so common for people to say, I can come, but they don't come.
Okay. So this song is called Song 50. Paul and I were playing at some worship music, and I was just getting set up and noodling around on the keyboard, and came up with this little idea, and Paul said, whoa, copy that, that's really good. And so I recorded it, and it turned out that it was the song 50, so the 50th idea on my jump drive, so we called it Song 50.
Okay.
Hi, friends. Kevy Canuck here from Kitchener, Ontario, and you're listening to 102.7 CKMS RadioWaterloo.ca.
Yeah.
One of the most significant moments in my entire life happened when I was on that boat. We were on the boat for about 4 months, and I remember we were sailing in a really remote group of islands in the Bahamas. Mm. And I remember thinking to myself, something has changed. I realize that I'm not thinking about tomorrow. I'm not thinking about the future or what I'm going to do next or any of those things. All I'm thinking about is I'm here in this moment right now. And I knew that I had traversed, I had crossed some kind of a boundary into this place where I was living only in the present, in the moment.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking to myself, I never want to go back to the old way of living. There's two things about being out on the ocean. The first one is that, and the second one is it is full of life. The dolphins come by and say hello. That, you know, you'll see a group of tunas, and they one of the things they love to do is they love to jump and dive and play in the water. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so every day there were moments of just sheer beauty and joy.
And being. You don't hear about the world. You're not following the news.
All the crap. That's
It just social commitments you don't have. The running, buying this, buying that. None of that. You're just kind of really enjoying living.
So is this like maybe a 6 month part of your life, or was this?
Well, that one turned only to be four and a half months.
Good for you guys, that's amazing.
But we would have gone on. We were prepared, and we had traveled and met up with another fellow, and had gone to Cuba during that same trip. The fellow who owned the boat we were on ended up having to go back to the States for a trial that his city was involved in.
Oh, okay.
So he wanted to take the boat back to Fort Lauderdale, which we did, and he was going to sell the boat. He'd kind of had his little dream thing, and he was putting it up for sale. So we cleaned it up, and he was putting it up for sale, and he was leaving. But in the meantime, we reconnected with an Australian who had bought a boat in the States and was going to Australia with his boat. We ended up meeting him down in
Key West.
Oh, yeah. And we said, well, we're just ending up our little job, our little experience with our boat. And he said, well, I'm heading to Havana. If you want to come with me. Sure enough, he waited for us, and we packed our stuff up, and we got on Steve's boat, and we went from Key West and sailed to Havana, Cuba.
Wow.
In the meantime, we were probably thinking of even going to Panama with him, because he was going through Panama to through the canal and then back home to Australia, where he would fix up the boat and sell it for a profit. But while we were in Cuba, we got a call from our son who was getting married, and could you come home in Toronto? And we said, absolutely, we'll fly home. So we flew home, and that trip was over.
Part of the thing about sailing is you got to really like the people you're with, because you know, like, it's a small boat. And
well, 4 months, you're stuck on.
You got to like them.
Yeah.
And one of the things is I really liked this guy. And Margaret felt the same way.
Yeah,
we really liked him. Yeah. And, you know, he was just fun to he was fun to hang out with. And
boating people are fun. Like,
fun.
They're all fun. They're all the sailors we met.
Well, he must have been just ecstatic that you guys were the only people that showed up.
Like he was thankful, I guess.
We made his dream possible.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had worked hard all his life and had saved some money together, put some money together, and he had a pretty nice boat, and we felt really honored to be able to be part of his trip.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a really exciting trip.
Good for
we
you
went to places that were astoundingly beautiful. I can't put to words. Like, I've been to a lot of places. I've been to Indonesia, Bali, you know, different places. And there were parts of this story that we're telling right now that were like arrest your attention. They were so profoundly beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And Paul kept he did a blog the whole time. So pretty
really?
Every day
he posted pictures and wrote things and uploaded it. Yep. So we had Paul and Marg's sailing adventure that you faithfully kept, and great pictures that he took.
Wow,
we got fabulous pictures. But that's not the end of the sailing story, because we got home and Paul stayed on that internet group, and lo and behold, another fellow was needing help to move his boat from Hamilton to Nova Scotia, and he was going all the way up the St. Lawrence River in the summer.
Yep.
And so he said, why don't you come down and meet me? So we thought, okay, let's go down and meet him. He was a great guy, and he was moving a monohull, so it wasn't a catamaran, it was a monohull.
Yeah, yeah.
And was leaving in July, and it would be a 5 or 6 week trip. And we signed on and said, yep, that'd be great. It was just he and his wife was going to join us a few weeks later in Quebec City.
Yep.
So we left Hamilton Harbor on this boat. And again, I did most of the cooking and Paul helped do the steering, or whatever you call it, the steering. But that that was a fabulous trip too, if you can imagine. Through
the big thing was the whales we saw.
Whales.
Yeah, don't tell me. Stop talking about that.
Beluga whales and sunsets.
They're gorgeous. They are beautiful.
Beautiful. And they're so curious.
They are.
We had a yellow dinghy hanging on the back of the boat, and these beluga whales would come up. They wanted to see what was this yellow that they would see, or I don't know if they see color, but they certainly noticed something.
Right.
They would swim with us. And
I have a photograph of a beluga, and she or he is just looking at, like, what the heck is that about?
Yeah. And actually, you got one, I think, looking right at you, right?
There was eye contact. They're really clever, I think.
Yeah, they're clever.
Oh, I think they're my favorite animal.
Yeah.
Whales are my favorite animal.
Yeah,
we saw a lot of different kinds of whales. Minke whales and, you know, just...
so amazing.
Sperm whale.
So that took us... Was that 5 week trip or 6 weeks?
Five
weeks, all the way up. And you go quite north. Yeah. Like the St. Lawrence River isn't just going east.
Yeah,
you go
sure.
northeast. And then we got out and went to Île de Madeleine and then sailed across to... Shetty Camp in... Cape Breton Island.
Cape Breton
Island.
Oh, okay.
So we got off and just had a great time with that couple, and then rented a car, toured around a little bit, and then flew home.
Oh,
so that was
nice.
That was amazing. So that was it. Within a year, we really, from retirement to the end of that summer, about September, we'd had these two amazing...
Huge adventures.
Huge adventures. Yeah, that I couldn't believe it. I thought, oh yeah, wow, this is what you want to do after you quit working.
What can you top it off with?
Yeah, what can you top it off with?
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
And then the next year we ended up topping it off because we went to Costa Rica. That was our first trip to Costa Rica. And meeting amazing people there. And
we did a film festival.
Did our film
festival
there.
In a place called Estrio Soeste.
Yeah, we did a film festival on the beach in a bar, and got people who had films, and again, forerunner documentary films, in Spanish, English subtitles, or English with Spanish subtitles, so we could have both populations there.
Wow.
Met some amazing people there, and we ended up going back and forth to Costa Rica for another 6, 7, 8 years.
Yeah.
We just haven't been there for the last couple. Blessing.
I can't imagine more adventure and more beauty.
Yeah. My sister's husband, the Argentine fellow, he's boated all his life. So we had been on a couple of trips with them, but just as guests. We've been in Brazil.
But he did encourage me once.
Yes.
He said, take over the helm. Yeah. This is what I want you to do. And then he came back a half an hour later and he said, you're a natural.
Yeah.
And I'm not taking a bow. He encouraged me by saying those words. Hey, you can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I went, okay.
It's not rocket science, you know?
Yeah.
It's like learning anything.
That's empowering, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, if you love this, this is empowering.
Yeah.
So you went on that journey then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and really, really an awesome time, because we were in Brazil and we also were in Trinidad with him.
Oh, okay.
And he was just a really lifelong sailor, kind of guy that, you know, you asked
really
him a
capable.
Question and you knew that he gave you really good advice.
Good stuff.
Nice. So it was great sailing with somebody of that level of expertise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's security in that too.
I'm really enjoying all the stuff you guys do. Like, this is great. The social work in Africa or Costa Rica or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, Paul, as he said, he's a forerunner. I don't think I'm a forerunner, but I like adventure. I'm not a risk taker, but being with a forerunner person helps you because you realize you'll be safe. Because he's capable and he's a risk taker, but he's a wise.
Yeah.
He's got wisdom.
Yeah.
So that allows me to try some things that maybe in another life I wouldn't have tried.
Right. Sure. Right.
Yeah, so and I really appreciate her willingness to take a risk. To get out of her comfort zone and say, let's do this. Because, you know, realistically, you only live once.
Yeah.
And that's not a surprise. Everybody knows that. But what it really means is that there are going to be moments. There were moments. I'll tell you something. When we sailed across from Anstabofee in the Gaspé Peninsula across to Île de Madeleine, which is halfway between there and Nova Scotia, which is Cape Breton Island.
Yep. Right.
There was an anomaly in the ocean caused by a trench, and we're going along, and all at once the waves just went up, and suddenly I could not hold course on where we were going. So I had to I said, well, I'll give it a chance. I'll bring it around, and we'll head into the waves. And it just beat the heck out of us. And people started going, like, I'm feeling sick, and they started getting seasick and all the rest. So then I go, okay, what am I going to do? Okay, I'm going to run with this. So I got let the waves come from behind, and we were surfing down them. And that is, I'll tell you, that isn't fun either. And so I did that until we got out of that, whatever it was that was there, within 10 hours or 8 hours, the sea was like glass.
Like glass,
But so you have those moments that stretch you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our lives weren't at risk. We were just uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but if you don't mind being a little uncomfortable from time to time, you can do a lot of the things that you wouldn't normally do.
I think when you put yourself in a place of vulnerability, it really does stretch you. It scares you.
Uh-huh.
For me personally, it scares me, but it excites me.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of both those elements that are going on. The risk taking, I have a little bit of that risk taking behavior that, you know, what the heck, I don't care.
Yeah.
We're doing it. That's just it, you know. But in that, you're putting yourself into a place of vulnerability.
Yeah.
But with logical, there's that logicism that always kind of comes through. But that's where growth happens. That's where you find your joy.
Yeah.
And
that's where my brain things were going off, right?
Yes.
Remember I told you?
That you'd never experienced.
No.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you're right. You know, life is this excites me.
Yeah.
This, it really excites me. It, you know, life is for living and, you know, we all talk about it, but, you know, and I've seen the other side of that when life may end.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that or have had that experience, the opposite is something that you strive to go for as well.
But, you know, for me, I've lived an adventurous life and I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
It's part of who I am. Don't tell me that I can't live an exciting, adventurous life. And if that's the case, I'd rather take my chances than have my life diminished down to something that isn't worth living.
Right, exactly. And this is the same thing as my philosophy going to work, in a way. Because I can go to work and be really, really worried about getting this COVID thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I forgot to wash my hands, or I forgot to put on my mask. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And some people are really, really like that.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? If I'm going to get this, and that's the way my life was going, and that's the way it was supposed to be, there's a lot of people that recovered from it, too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So it's not it's not necessarily...
Most people, 98% of the people
recovered from it. I know. So why are we sweating it?
Mm-hmm.
I think because everybody around us, the governments, want to try and keep control of things somehow across the board. Mm-hmm. And,
I agree. I'm not saying
they're
evil.
So I understand philosophy about the life and liberty. I see it more clear now than I did.
And I think it changes to, we're older than you guys.
Yes.
So you kind of go, all right, while we can do things, should we keep doing things? And we go, okay, we're on the last 6 inches of the art stick, you know?
Yeah, bring it on.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Right? So we've got hopefully 10, 15 years, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I say to Steve, you know?
Yeah, let's just go with the bang.
Go. Yeah.
That's what I keep telling him. Yeah. You know what? We're going.